The hardest part is to ask people to change their habits. Like, stop taking planes, stop taking your car, stop using so much energy for doing this and that, stop consuming this because it's emitting a lot of CO2 emission, stop eating beef. And so we're giving them all the tooling, everything to not change too much the habits.
That's Thibaut Hugues de la Rose, the CEO and co-founder of Backmarket, a marketplace for refurbished devices like smartphones and laptops. They are the most valuable startup in French history and have raised over $1 billion since they launched in 2014. That includes $335 million in May this year with a valuation of $5.7 billion. Now, obviously, Backmarket is a big success now. But back in 2014, when Thibaut launched the company with his co-founders, they had no idea whether it was going to make it or not. As a founder, it's very hard to take that first leap into the unknown, and even more so when you're in a job you love. Do you risk it all when the odds are stacked against you? The stakes are rarely higher, and it's so difficult to do it well. That is what this interview today is really all about, getting out of your comfort zone, because that is what Thibaut did when he left his job to found Backmarket. And despite being the head of such a successful company, he's managed to stay humble. How do you go from being a middle manager to one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the whole of Europe, pitching to former Vice President of the United States, Al Gore, and not get too big for your boots? Well, today, you're going to find out. This is Secret Leaders from Kindling Media. I'm your host, Dan Murray-Serta. Backmarket is a part of an emerging class of startups focusing on the circular economy. But what is the circular economy? Why do they want consumers to stop buying new devices? Well, it's all about trying to reduce carbon emissions.
Macro picture, first, like, we're emitting 36 billion tons of CO2 emission every year as human beings on the planet. And so we know we need to divide them by two right now, and we have to get to net zero within the next 40 years. Otherwise, the human species won't survive within hundreds of years. And you see that challenge, and you think about the root causes. And the tech, the production of hardware, tech products, is responsible for 4% of those CO2 emissions. Usually when you talk about like CO2 emissions and the environment, you kind of think more about, you know, planes, traveling and all this. And when it comes to tech, people tend to think, oh, it's because of, you know, data centers and everything. And you don't have a clear idea of the level of energy and the level of CO2 emission that's required to produce your laptop, your smartphone. But that's actually insane. To give you a few numbers, like, it's emitting 120 kilograms of CO2 emission to be produced. And when it's a refurbished one, it's basically maximum 20 kilograms. So you're saving 100 kilograms of CO2 emissions every time you choose refurbished over new, because you are not entering again into the manufacturing process, which is responsible for 80% of the CO2 emission of the product. Once it's here, produced, then it's done. The impact on the planet is here. You know, we've extracted a lot of raw materials. It's been treated, a lot of logistics, a lot of heating in order to manufacture the product and deliver them to the end customer. This has been done, and that's it. So we kind of approach the thing with Backmarket like, okay, the production of tech products is the big problem. So how about doing more with what we already have, so we don't need to produce all the time? And then when you double click on this and you say, okay, why people are not reusing products, you know, like, why they are holding to their smartphones for just like 2 years or not 5 or 10, etc. The first issue is trust. At least when it's new, it's safe, you know, I have my warranties, I'm covered, and I can always get refunded in any case, etc. So no trust issues. When it's not new, when it comes to be used, so Craigslist and all the Craigslist of this world everywhere, it's all the way around. You're saving a lot of money, but you're taking a lot of risk, because if something happens to the product, then you're on your own. And so this is why we were convinced that the Backmarket value proposition would resonate, because we were offering them and we were bridging the trust gap, and we are offering them basically all the warranty that they can find on you, but on reused product and product that already lived. changing habits is clearly the hardest thing. So our approach is we will come as close as possible to the habits of people and offer them the alternative that doesn't cost them anything or not much.
Thibaut knew he wanted to be an entrepreneur long before starting Backmarket. So he went to business school and then got an internship with NetEven, which helps small businesses sell their products on online marketplaces across the world. As part of his business degree, he spent time abroad in Mexico, where he had his first idea for a business.
Those years when you're a student and you're traveling, you have no problem. Everything is pure joy. And so, yeah, I traveled a lot in Mexico, and this is where I happened to have my first ideas of, you know, like entrepreneurship. I tried to develop a deal with a mate in my classroom. His dad was growing avocados, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'm sure we can import them in France. You know, they are so good, they taste so well. And so we went pretty far on the project, which ended not to go live because of so many regulation and administrative stuff. Then came back to France for a year, then went back out traveling and spending my first year of master's degree in Delhi, in India. Completely different planet. The culture is so different, you know, they kind of live for the life of after. So if you do good in your actual life, then you will be upgraded. And so I find them fascinating, very peaceful, very different from our Western culture and standards. So I think I really like to discover new thing and new culture. And I was very excited by my journey in India because everywhere you go, it's different. So I came back, I finished my master's degree. I knew I wanted to create a business, but I also knew it was, you know, I've never really worked. I had some internships, right? But it's, let's face it, it's not the same. And so then the question was, where can I go where I feel like I will be learning things that could help me further when I want to create something? And I felt pretty much attracted with the internet because I thought that, you know, it was developing very fast, and that also that kind of opened the door to building things at scale and have a massive impact. That I think that was exciting. You know, I didn't know much, to be honest. But I was like, okay, this is exciting because this is a land of opportunities to create stuff. And I was fairly new at the time, which was basically 10 years ago. I looked for an internship, the last internship of my master's degree. I found NetEven. And then I got hired after my internship. And so stayed there for close to 3 years. And I learned so much. I'm super grateful to the co-founders of NetEven again. I discovered marketplaces. All the beauty of those models resonated quite a lot with me because I really felt like you don't have to like raise a million or invest like so much money to set up a marketplace. Really not, because it's not your stock. You just need to, you know, solve many problems, obviously, with the chicken and the eggs, etc. But I think that was a fantastic land of business creation opportunities. And then I spent so much time looking at, you know, how Amazon is working, how eBay is working, how Play.com was working in the UK, how Walmart was working in the US, because NetEven was essentially plugged like as a middle software between all those marketplaces.
And what was what was your role there?
I was essentially an account manager.
And the reason I'm asking, Thibaut, and please carry on straight after this, I guess, clarification. But the reason I think it's really important to share, you were an account manager. I was previously an account manager too, and in a creative agency. The reason I think this is important is because you've gone on to found one of the most exciting, highly valued startups in, you know, well, in the world, frankly. And you didn't, it's not like you were the CMO. It's not like you were in the leadership team. It's not like you were, you know, I'm not trying to insult your expertise, but I think it's really important to give our listeners also, you know, really creative inspiration here, that it doesn't necessarily matter what your previous role is. You know, a lot of people listening right now will have entry-level roles, will have mid-level roles, will have senior roles. None of that stuff matters. What matters is, what are you learning and how are you applying it? And this is a really, really great example of that. So I just wanted to clarify where you were in the stack, essentially, of that company, because what it sounds like is middle management.
Yeah, it is. And it was totally middle management. I was individual contributor, essentially. So my job was to help, you know, clients to grow their business. And actually, I think it's the best job to really feel the pain of the sellers, because I was talking to sellers every day. Like, I could listen to the actual pains. And within my book, like my seller's portfolio, I have 4 refurbishing factories of smartphones. And we were talking a lot about their pains, like, oh, my inventories are moving so fast, you know, they are not new products, so I don't have hundreds of them. It's like, I have 2 of those, then they will sell out, then I receive 10 in 2 weeks, maybe, and we don't know, it's circular economy, you know, so prices are fluctuating all the time. I was like, wow, this is fascinating. And you know, I was plugged literally to their pains. And so that helped me so much to create Backmarket and to have a very clear sense of the value creation that they needed.
If you're trying to grow your startup and you're dealing with companies outside of the UK, you're probably going to need ISO 27001 at some point. It's not the sexiest acronym, but it's basically the global standard for proving your security practices are up to scratch, like how you handle customer data. The same goes with SOC 2. You're going to need it if you're a SaaS company. But achieving these security frameworks can be very tedious and very costly. This is where our partner, Vanta, comes in. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work for certifications like ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, HIPAA, and more, getting you audit ready in weeks instead of months and saving you up to 85% of the cost. And as a special offer, our listeners get 20% off Vanta. Just head to vanta.com/secretleaders. That's vanta.com/secretleaders for 20% off. There's a link in the description. Look, you know I'm fascinated by AI, but until the machines take over, there's only one thing that's going to determine your company's fortunes. People. This isn't some kind of hollow point to make me look good. If you speak privately to any successful entrepreneur, they'll confirm it's true. So, if you're a leader of a growing business, then you should check out Personio. It brings together all the important HR things like hiring, onboarding, payroll data, performance reviews, and so on. You don't want loads of employees sending you emails asking for time off. You want to be able to see things objectively, like it's taking you too long to hire. You want to do performance reviews well, having clear goals for people that are logged in a centralized system. And you want to do all these things in one simple tool without having to become an HR expert. All of this is possible with Personio. Check it out at personio.com/secretleaders. That's personio.com/secretleaders. There's a link in the show notes. Can I ask you, what did you learn? Like, other than obviously these specific customer issues, what are some really amazing insights you got? And again, the reason I'm asking this is because entrepreneurs tend to go on a variety of paths, right? But one of those paths is you, and I think personally, my view is the best way to become an entrepreneur is to go work for someone else first, is to work in another company, get trained, get feedback, see how other people do it. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I think it's a really just great opportunity to learn with other people around you before you go and assume you can do it all yourself. That's certainly what happened with me. That's clearly what's happened with you. Again, the question is, what did you learn from working with other people? What was the good and the bad?
I had the great balance given by my manager, obviously, of, you know, you have the high level objectives, you have to make, you know, more money, etc., with all those clients. But then when it comes to the how, then I was super free. And I had a lot of space for innovation. I had a lot of space to fulfill my curiosity. Whenever I was asking for something, there were always something, like it was always showing me, you know, oh, this is how it works. But, you know, this industry is a bit different. This is apparel. their problem is very different from the wine industry. It's very different from the tech industry. It's so much like it's so different from the refurbished industry. And he gave me all the lectures, the key to basically read and understand every businesses. But it wasn't telling me this is how you should do it. I also happened to discover tech a lot, and I was fascinated about tech, and this is why I really like working with Q, my co-founder, and the CTO of Backmarket now, is because when we started at the same time at Backmarket, both interns, it was in tech, I was in the business side, and there was no product, no product team, no product managers, and we're essentially a tech company. So when you don't have a product team, then business people are talking to engineers in order to, you know, make the product evolve and everything. And I think that was the best opportunity ever for me, because I could literally understand what really are the technical constraints. And I was, you know, making as many steps as possible. I knew what I wanted for my clients. I knew, you know, what they could provide and the maximum I could get from them in terms of feeds, in terms of inventory, in terms of information, etc. But then I had to transform those pieces of information into actual business. And so that's where tech comes in place. But you really need to show interest into how it works, like databases, feed management, etc. Because when you're talking to tech people, you know, they have their constraints. And so understanding that helped me so much, like to understand like how databases are working, how feeds are working, what's possible, what's not. And this is essentially thanks to the proximity we had with tech, but also the proximity we had with Q. Because at the same time, Q was passionate about the business, you know. Most of the engineers at NetEven were like, okay, we're fine among ourselves, talking about engineering stuff. But it was really like, how does that work? Like, you know, like business is interesting to him. So we kind of found the perfect balance without, okay, let me know your constraints. And I'll do as much as possible if you tell me how it works and what do they need, etc. So this balance, I think, is the most important thing that you need to have when you create a tech business. Because I've observed a lot of co-founders, non-tech, saying like, you just need to do that. That works elsewhere. But you have no idea of, you know, how many engineers were required, like how complicated is the systems, etc.
Yeah, so for you, it was an opportunity to learn how different departments, different people, different complexities actually function and how they work together. And then therefore, how you can communicate and collaborate and bring people together to get the outcome you're looking for.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which, you know, fundamentally, that is the job of a CEO. That is the job of a founder. It's an interesting one, because obviously sometimes you realize that a little bit too late because you try and take on everything too much yourself. But all of those things are real great hallmarks of excellent leadership. I want to just focus for a second on something I picked up on, because you speak of your last company with so much love, basically. It's clear that you were a fan working there. It's clear that you're grateful for the things you learned there. And again, for listeners who might be working in a company they love, you know, it can be very difficult to be like, well, everything's great here, so I'm going to leave, right? That's an irrational behavior. It's very hard to find companies you love. And it's also very hard to leave jobs that pay you well and treat you well and all of these things, because there's risk associated. It's a lot easier for people when you don't like the company, or you don't like what you're doing, or you feel it doesn't fulfill you, or you happen to work, you know, at an unethical company and you're really into sustainability or whatever the thing is, it doesn't fit your values. This is something different. You're working in a company that fits your values, is giving you opportunities to grow, is something you love. You clearly like the founders, you're learning a lot all the time, and you still choose to leave. So talk to me a little bit about what's going on in your head making this choice to leave and start Back Market. Like, how difficult are you finding this decision? How did you go about it?
I think when you really like your job and you feel that you're learning a lot, and you have at the same time an idea and a strong desire that's growing for entrepreneurship, then it's much better to just resign and take the decision to create your company, because you are really making your decision based upon the fact that you are convinced by the idea, you are convinced that it's going to, you know, maybe going to work, instead of if you get bored and everything, then maybe you're just leaving because you're bored. Like, or at least it's part of the decision-making process, and that could be maybe too much about that, and you're kind of making it up. Like, it's because I'm creating this company that I'm leaving. And the truth might be that the 60% of the decision is because you were bored and not satisfied with your actual work. So I think that's a good sign. Whenever you're feeling good in a company, but you feel the desire to create something growing, if you feel it growing like for a while, I think it's worse, even worse to take the shot, because you're clearly doing it for the good reason, which is that you're convinced that there is a good chance that it will work.
When Thibaut and his co-founder Quinton LeBrouster, or Q, as Thibaut calls him, decided they wanted to leave their jobs and set up Back Market, they had to tell their bosses, the founders of NetEven, Antoine Riviere and Stéphane Brault, that they wanted to leave. Thibaut was nervous.
We connect with Q and we say, okay, tomorrow morning, we're asking Steph and Antoine to see them. I booked the big meeting room. Every detail was prepared. We sent the email. We made sure the agenda was clear at that moment. And it was just like, you know, like, let's take 15 minutes to talk. As there were no agenda, you know, I started to receive a Skype, like, from my boss saying, there is no agenda at the meeting. Like, is there something in particular I should know? And I answered, like, you know, usually I'm super straightforward with them. And I started to answer, yeah, it's personal, so I will tell you live. And it was like, okay, let's do it now then, because Steph and Q seem to be available as well. And because it was like kind of stressed as well. I was like, okay. So heart was pumping very hard at the time, because there's maybe like 20 meters between my desk and the meeting room. And he was passing me, and I was like, okay, I'm coming, I'm following you. And Q and Steph came in, and I went straight like, okay, we have something to share with you. We have that idea. It's a marketplace for a refurbished product that we want to create. We really want to go out and create that company. So that's number one. And the reaction was actually very, very good. I was like, well, I'm not going to tell you myself that's a bad idea to create a company, because this is essentially what we've done. But it was really into how we need to organize ourselves and the followings, because it was, you know, it was stressed by the fact that we wanted to leave quite fast. I'm like, sure, we can make a lot of efforts, etc. We can stay a bit longer if you have a hard time to find someone, or, you know, like a reorg, etc. And I started to say, you know, like, for us, what would be incredible and very important is that we could develop the API between NetEven and you that won't take you any single line of code. Q did code the whole API to connect to other marketplaces. So it will just use essentially the code that is connected and the half bridge that is coded and to connect with our system. And so you have our trust, and even because I knew they were super concerned about the roadmap and our technical ability to deliver. This is a huge pain in every tech company, like, you know, the roadmap. And so we anticipated everything, like Q could come eventually and code within Back Market to finish the work for 5 days if need, but don't worry, that's not going to take a single piece of your time and efforts, etc. And so we kind of prepared everything in order to have them say, like, yes, of course, like, if it doesn't take us anything, like, and they said yes, okay, if it doesn't take us anything or any effort. And I was jubilating at the time because that was the big unknown on our side that could delay basically the launch of, 6 months, a year, kill the project itself because it's so fragile at the time. And so, yeah, that was a moment. And then we left the meeting with Q and we drank a lot of beers to celebrate afterwards and say, hey, that's it. It's happening.
Yeah, and it's an amazing moment, isn't it? And I think this is an interesting insight because this is what life is about. Life is not just about having an idea, because I think there's an overemphasis on ideas in general. It's about what are you risking to take forward your idea? And a lot of people do actually back down from those moments. There's just a lot of fear. If you haven't done something like that before, if you haven't confronted a boss that you respect, that you like in a work environment and you like, you can be conspiring with your friends about a great idea a lot. And I've seen this happen with my friends. A lot of people talk, not everyone takes action. And taking action can be absolutely terrifying. And again, it's a lot easier when you don't like what you're doing for people that do like what they're doing and still go on to do it anyway. You know, I have a lot of admiration for that because I relate to it. It's exactly what happened with me when I left. I was quite happy in my job, but I still left. This is many years ago. That company didn't work out, but I went on a path of entrepreneurship, and you keep going and you keep going and it becomes, you know, your newfound passion and love. You know, it's worth saying I actually also quit my job in 2013, so similar time to you. And, you know, I've had failures before starting Heights, which is my current company, which fortunately is going well, not a failure, as well as Secret Leaders. But these things take me on a journey. And the thing that I want to bring up here is you started Backmarket in 2014. Again, when we see companies like Backmarket in the news, suddenly we're like, whoa, what the hell is this overnight success I never heard of? Like, these guys have just come out of nowhere. You know, that seems like a massive valuation for a refurbished device marketplace. But of course, there's just so much going on under the surface, grinding out win after win over what is now almost coming up to 10 years, right? I think this is like a really exciting point just to share, because you have 650 employees in 16 countries. It is easy, like I say, for people to just suddenly become aware of companies like yourself because you hit all of the headlines and become this like phenomenon. And I think what's really different about you than some of these other phenomenons we've had in this ilk is you haven't really just come out of nowhere. You've built a really great business over multiple years of focus and dedication. So I'd like to talk about that side of the business. I'd like to talk about what it's like to have a vision and be building consistently for the long term. And I suppose like a nice way to start is, did you ever believe that you'd be building a $5+ billion company back in 2014?
No, when you launch it, you're just looking for it to live. You really wanted to just to work, you know, to have clients. Like the day you press the button, that you know that I knew that my mom was going to, you know, place an order. But, you know, you never know before you launch, like, is it just in my mind? Or is it, you know, like, are people going to be receptive? And is the value prop going to resonate? Because, you know, I was convinced, you know, like, refurbed is so much better than used because it's so much more affordable. It comes with the same set of warranties. It comes with you know, like a much better cost for the planet. I knew the pains for the sellers, the professionals. So I was 100% convinced I could add value to them. For the customer, you have no idea, no way of knowing like if it's going to work before you go live. But you just believe in yourself and your ideas, and you have that vision. Like it just makes sense for every stakeholder. I think this is the question. Like, does it make sense for every stakeholder? Does it solve a real pain in their life? So I was convinced, but I could never foresee like the company growing that much. That being said, you know, I'm always like in the field, like, you know, like for me, it's the system is kind of our baby. So we built it from scratch. So I know where we are. I know that we still have so much to build. Like, you know, circular economy, it's fascinating. The more you move forward, the more you see opportunities, the more you see that, you know, nothing has been properly built to scale this. And so the more opportunities there are for back markets to be seized and, you know, to create meaningful things for both customers and sellers. So I don't really care about numbers, valuation, number of people. I don't really take a lot of moments where I'm sitting on my couch and kind of looking back and saying, oh, we were that small and this is crazy, etc. I'm kind of always a bit focused on the present and the future. Customers, we need to enable them to basically get rid of every accessory that they have and they're not using anymore. It needs to be frictionless. It needs to be 100% trustworthy. It needs to be simple. I'm always thinking about what we need to do and always so excited about the value proposition that we can deliver and that we are not delivering yet. And so I don't take that much pleasure into looking back and saying, oh, we've got those trophies. That's not the way my brain works, I guess.
Backmarket have been going for 8 years now, and like in every startup, there have been some terrible days. But what was the worst of the lot?
I think, you know, the hardest was basically to let go my first COO, Chief Operation Officer. So we were 30 people at the time. And basically it wasn't going well among ourselves. I think that there was a cultural gap. We didn't at the time, we didn't like formulate what was our cultures, our value. That was all like not defined, basically, so intangible. But this is where I felt like for the first time, like, okay, there is a cultural gap. It's a misfit, basically. And she was great. She had a lot of skills. She was working hard. She was delivering a lot of stuff. And realizing that intangible, like, okay, culture is more important, actually, than hard skills and delivering stuff. And so taking the decision personally to have the discussions with her and say, you know, it's not working. It's not your work. It's not working because your work is working. But it's at the whole, like the it's not working because culture wise, we don't, you know, work the same way. And I think that's affecting negatively the company. So that was the first time I had to have a hard discussion with someone. And to let go someone that was quite important in the company at the time. That was kind of, you know, the three co-founder plus that person being the first new senior person joining the team to help us grow to the next step. And so you kind of feel not prepared. I think you're not until you do it once. So that was taking a lot of energy to me. And I could remember I wasn't sleeping well for days before. And I was kind of always looking for excuses like, but, you know, she does that perfectly, etc. But when you are, you know, going to bed and thinking about that again and again, I mean, it becomes clear that there is something wrong and you have to take the decision. So that was the hardest moment where I kind of felt like maybe I'm going to scratch the company very badly if I do that, but I kind of feel, okay, this is becoming obvious. Let's be brave. Let's engage the conversation and move forward, because if you leave that, then maybe you will build everything around new people, newcomers, new culture is going to grow, and you are not going to be able to correct things. The more you wait, the more painful it will be in the future.
I really relate to that. There's been a few times over the last couple of years, I've had to let go of people who were really good. They had all the skills, they were really good, but the values fit wasn't right. Or it was at the time they joined, and, you know, as a company grows, things change.
Yeah.
And
It's really difficult because fundamentally other people in the team also seem to be shocked and surprised and don't agree with the decision. But the difference between you and me is, other than the billions that you have in your valuation and the size of your company, but is that I failed my last company. And if you fail your last company, one of the reasons I failed my last company is I didn't recognize what you just recognized. I didn't recognize the difference between skills and values and culture fit. I failed to recognize it really clearly, and I let people do the work the way they wanted to do the work for as long as they wanted to do the work because they had the skills. And I learned the lesson and I paid the price. And so the second time round, as soon as I understand that, as soon as I start to get a whiff of that, I'm very quick to make sure I don't relive that same mistake. Because, you know, ultimately, if you ignore feedback, you'll keep on learning the same lesson. And so I don't want to learn that lesson again. I think it's really impressive that you spotted that early enough. But like you're reflecting, that was one of your most difficult times. Because again, like leaving a company that you're enjoying, letting go of an employee that's objectively doing a good job and has the skills you need to deliver is an impossibly difficult decision. Thank you for sharing that. You've done loads of fundraising. I'd love to know what it was like to pitch Al Gore.
Well, it was a great moment. I had a Zoom meeting. I couldn't meet him personally because it was COVID at the time, but I had an hour and a half with him. That was amazing. I couldn't believe I was going to talk to him for real, like former vice president of the United States and this, you know, like big defender and advocate of we need to fight climate change. And we had, I think, very frank and transparent discussion around the challenges of back market. How do we scale circular economy? How do we bring it further? How do we engage with manufacturers? How do we win it, basically? It was great because I felt like he knew a lot about the topic himself. I couldn't even possibly think that he would know about back market before I talked to him. I was like, okay, he's got so much on his plate. No way he knows what we do and everything. But he had time to know, to cover the topic, the subject. And so we could get into, you know, almost details, our business approach, our approach to public affairs, our approach to climate change. How do we track, our impact and all of this? So yeah, that was a great moment. And he is definitely amazing for me because since he invested, he's dedicated his own time to help us forward. He created a roundtable with 8 CEOs and myself, like, you know, like a CEO of HP, CEO of Verizon, CEO of huge companies that I could never really approach before, not without him. And he was the master of ceremony. I was like pinching myself, like, is this real? He's like introducing like a... And here is my dear friend Thibaut, and I was like, "Yes, you are my friend, Art." And yeah, I think it's a great person. He wants to have a great impact, and he wants to take the fight forward. You know, he's a great asset and a great partner for us.
What have been your best learnings on the journey? What are the things that we can, as other entrepreneurs listening to you, what are some of the really important things that you'd like listeners to know if embarking on a, you know, unicorn status, changing our whole industry? What do we need to know to do it well?
I think one of the key tips I always give to people when they're asking me, like, how do you scale successfully? For me, it's about finding people that are complementary and different from you and from the skill set that you have. So I take a close look at, you know, the people we have inside the company. We have creative people, we have scientific people, we have financial people, business-minded people, operation-minded and wired people. And so all of those people have different brains. And on top of that, they come with different backgrounds from different countries. The more you add into the mix of differences and way of thinking, the best it is, because every step forward, whenever you're making decisions, you always think about your customers or your sellers, and you're thinking, okay, am I bringing enough value? Okay, this is it. So we'll do A before B, and let's move forward and embark, like, you know, like a lot of people around. The more diversity that you have around the table, the best chances that you have to solve the problem and to get successful. So don't look for clones, people that think the same way as you and always agree. Look for people that are going to give you a reading that is going to be completely different from yours, but also like so insightful. And you always want to have that, I would never have thought about that approach, or I'm amazed by what you're offering now or what you've achieved, because I don't know how to do that.
Amazing. Thibaut, firstly, thank you so much for your time and the interview. Secondly, huge, huge congrats with what is clearly an absolutely brilliant business.
Thank you.
So nice to speak to an entrepreneur that scaled to that level, also quite clearly remaining massively humble. I think your passion and enthusiasm and authenticity really come through even on one conversation with you. So it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you and to chat with you then.
Thibaut Hugues de la Rose, the CEO and co-founder of Backmarket. Hugely successful and a lovely man. I've been your host, Dan Murray-Serta. This episode was produced by Ruth Edwards and brought together by our head of podcast, Will Stollerman. We'll be back next week learning from the world's top entrepreneurs. See you next time.